New laws which require train staff to complete minimum service requirements during strikes are no longer going to be used. Train drivers at 16 rail companies will stage a wave of one-day walkouts from the 30th of January. London North Eastern Railway originally said it would enforce service laws for this round of strikes, which could require staff to keep working to provide 40% of timetabled services. But LNER has since made a U-turn on the decision. In a moment, I'm going to speak to Max Winthrop, member of the Law Society's Employment Law Committee, about the implications of such strike laws. But first, let's speak to our very own Ben Clatworthy, travel correspondent for The Times. Ben, welcome back to the programme. Busy days for you at the moment. Let's talk LNER first. Any ideas why they U-turned and said that they wouldn't impose these service requirements, which I think a lot of commuters were probably praying for?
Yes, so LNER is a government-owned rail operator and often seen as sort of the flagship of the ones that fall under direct government control. Now, they went to the union, ASLEF, which represents train drivers, last week and said they were preparing to issue a work notice that would require 40% of services to run. Now, whether by coincidence or not, you can decide. ASLEF decided that they would hit LNER with a further 5 days of consecutive strike action in addition to a 1 day 24-hour strike, which kicks off. They're across the 16 operators staggered next week from the 30th of January. Now, LNER bosses obviously went away taking this information that they would be hit with effectively 6 days strikes in total and decided that maybe they wouldn't use this new legislation. But what is interesting is that it only became a tool, as it were, for rail operators last month. And these were the first major set of strikes that were expected to be a big litmus test of the effectiveness of this flagship legislation. What we see is that no companies want to use it.
No, and they don't want to use it, just to be very clear on this, they don't want to use it because they fear that it will escalate situations or the sort of standoff with the unions rather than, and that it's not worth it for the sake of a 40% of service still running.
Absolutely. That is the large thing, is fostering industrial relations, that they are trying to get to a point where they actually are able to resolve this dispute with the train drivers. But also because effectively what has been announced is a series of 1 day strikes across the 16 operators. They've become very good now at dealing with that in terms of, they either operate a strike day timetable or they don't. They know how the lay of the land is on these strike days, and to go away and try and work out a special timetable that fits the 40% of services isn't really feasible in the time that's available, although that time is dictated by the law. But what's interesting is that this minimum strikes or minimum service levels legislation was first talked about by Grant Shapps when he was Transport Secretary back in July 2022. And at the time, they were the government was basically selling this and have been selling it as a silver bullet to protect passengers against strikes. At the time of the announcement, the DfT said that's why we're introducing this legislation, to keep Britain moving, ensuring people can get to work, earn their own living and grow the economy. The legislation, as one source said to me yesterday, has failed, and nobody in government is acknowledging this. All they say is that it's a tool that's in the armory of the operators and it's their decision to use it.
Ben, very briefly, because I'm sure we'll have you back on later in the week to talk about it in more detail, but how disruptive do you anticipate these strikes are going to be?
Well, on the days that the all-out strike, some of the operators managed to run a skeleton service, others run virtually no service. The bigger thing starting next week is that there's also a 8 or 9, off the top of my head, day overtime ban. That has the bigger impact. What it does is reduces lots of services, including on very important commuter routes, to just one or two an hour.
And always very last minute as well, with drivers not turning up and so on. So. I think, I think we can safely assume a very disruptive, and maybe you'll come back and let me know maybe on Thursday, but nearer the time, just what we can do to kind of circumnavigate the disruption. But thank you very much, Ben. I'd like to bring Max Winthrop into the conversation, a member of the Law Society's Employment Law Committee. What did you make of what Ben had to say there? I mean, is this legislation just not worth the paper it's been printed on?
Well, I think it has certain difficulties anyway. And what Ben said about the division of labour between what the government's doing and what it expects employers to do is where the problems lie. So just recapping a little bit, if you go back to July, we brought in this new legislation called the Strikes Act, the Strike Minimum Service Levels Act 2023. And that was what you might call a piece of enabling legislation. It required the Secretary of State to amend our earlier industrial relations legislation and specifically gave the Secretary of State powers to introduce sort of minimum service levels in certain industries, fire, health, education, transport, that sort of thing. But then it sort of pushes a bit of the burden onto the employer. So what happens within those industries covered by minimum service levels requirements, and there's a lawful strike? Obviously it doesn't apply if it's an unlawful strike, because there are other remedies that the employer would seek then. But if there's a lawful strike, the employer can serve what's called a work notice on the trade union specifying minimum service levels. But I think that's where things start to go a bit wrong. We've seen it with what LNER are doing, and presumably within LNER, they've weighed up risks and benefits, and they thought to themselves, well, hang on a minute, is this really conducive to getting on with the trade unions and that collective resolution of disputes?
Yeah. So, Max, would you say that this is a piece of legislation that basically looks good and tough on the outside, but inside, as it were, very much like the Conservative government contemplating in the 80s and 90s direct interventions in strikes and essential services, it actually is unworkable?
I think there's a lot to be said for that viewpoint. I think that there was an element of grandstanding when the legislation came in. And if you remember, there was rather an odd sort of rhetoric about, oh, well, we can do this because they do it in France, and they do it in Spain. Everybody in Europe has similar provisions. The problem is it's very difficult to compare one nation state's kind of industrial relations issues and background to another. So that we don't tend to go really quite a bundle on the sort of collective works councils and things that you'd find in some other European nations. And I think minimum service levels might work in a situation, ironically, where there's stronger links between employers and trade unions.
Yeah, but so you're talking about better relationships, basically. Very, very interesting. Thank you so much, Max Winthrop, for elaborating on that a bit more for us. Difficult to understand why you'd bring in legislation that ultimately doesn't seem workable, but we have seen a bit of that recently. Max Winthrop was a member of the Law Society's Employment Law Committee and a partner at Sintons. Thanks again for chatting to me.